WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
In 1974, George Foreman and Muhammad Ali met in Zaire for a heavyweight championship bout. The rumble in the jungle was the only fight Foreman ever lost by a knockout. Foreman retired from boxing in 77, had a religious experience, and took up preaching. He was ordained in 1978 and soon after started his own church and youth center in Houston. But 9 years later, Foreman staged a comeback. To the amazement and pleasure of many middle-aged people, Foreman regained the title in 1994 when he was 45 years old. He eventually relinquished the title for refusing to fight a challenger and finally retired from the ring in 1997. Terry Gross spoke with Foreman in 1995. He still held the title then and had just written his autobiography, By George.
You started off as a street fighter. Mm-hmm. How did that affect your approach to boxing when you started to box?
Devastating, because I met Doc Brodus, my first boxing coach, in 66 in the Job Corps Center. I said, hey, I want to be a boxer. He said, okay, you're big enough, you're ugly enough, come on down to the gym. I remember going down to the gym, and he put me in a ring with a little guy, a little skinny guy, no muscles. You can see his ribs. I said, boy, I invited all my friends to watch my boxing match. I thought it was going to be just like on the streets. Jumped in the ring. I never did, was able to land one blow. The guy would move out of the way and hit me with this thing called a jab. And I'd charge him and try to grab him, and the referees would say, you can't wrestle. So it was a hard thing to abandon my street fighting tactics and move into another thing where I had to learn how to do box. I had to learn a new style, a whole new existence of fighting.
What was the hardest thing to give up from your street fighting style?
Grabbing. In the streets, I'd hit you and hit you. If you move out of the way, I would grab you and get you. In the ring, you were not able to, you can only use your fists. You can't open your hand and grab anyone. Plus, I wanted to bite too, but you had a mouthpiece.
Now, what about the kind of finesse that your trainer was trying to teach you?
Yeah, it was a long time before I could really comprehend what he was saying. George, you're not going to be able to just knock everybody out and run over everybody. You're going to have to learn this sport. And it took a few defeats before I decided I had to dedicate my life to learning more than just being powerful and strong. I had to learn this as a sport, jabbing and finesse, as you call it.
Did you used to psych yourself up before you entered the ring to get yourself to be really angry or to really hate your opponent?
Yeah, Dick Sattler, my first trainer, manager, in 69, I told him I wanted to be a boxer. He said he would teach me how to be a boxer, and I'd move in the ring and practice every day, styles, dancing, prancing, and I really wanted to be the next Muhammad Ali, that kind of stuff. So my first boxing match in Madison Square Garden, 1969, Donald Waldheim. Dick Sattler gets me into the dressing room. He rubs me down. He takes water away from me for 2 days. Then he starts cussing. This blankety blank is trying to stop your life. You go out there, and I mean, you knock him out. You hit him here. If he hides, you hit him behind. And he cusses and cusses and cusses. You hear me? Push him like this. And he asks me to push him, and I pushes him. By the time I get into that ring, I'm like a wind-up killer. And I thought he was going to let me be a boxer. From that point on, he would wind me up like a doll every time. It was not about my psyching myself up. He would engineer this creature.
Was that effective for you?
Oh, yes. When I got into that ring, sorry for a guy who didn't know how to protect himself. I remember boxing a guy, I think maybe in Seattle, Washington. I can't remember his name. We're matched, and I jumped out on this kid, and I tried to hit him, and I missed him. And I tried to hit him again. I'd miss him. I'd hit him in the back. Finally, I barely missed him, and he hit the floor. People threw candy wrappers, cigarette butts. They were booing. I said, get up, man. Get up. Don't do this. And later on after the fight, he walked up to me, and he saw I was really feeling down about what happened. They counted him out, but he wasn't out. He looked me in the eye. He said, you know, you really want to kill someone, don't you? He said, that's what you wanted. You wanted to kill me. He said, I wasn't going to get up for you to kill me.
Huh.
Do you understand? So I had this killer instinct, and it wasn't. And the sad thing, I'm upset with a guy because he won't get up and let me kill him. And for the first time, I realized that the best thing he could have done was just stay down there.
Now, so you got really psyched up with this killing instinct to get into the ring. Could you turn that off when a match was over?
You know, it's strange because you think you can turn it off, but later on, you're fighting once, twice, sometimes three times in a month. You go home and you say to yourself, it's over now, I'm going to go back. Finally, this stuff follows you around all the time. And if you're not careful, people see the best side of you in the ring. The awful side of you is outside of the ring. As you get closer, I'm having knockout after knockout. I'm starting to look at myself in the mirror. I see this body. I see this face. I see this man who's going to be heavyweight champ of the world. He is the king of men. He can beat anybody in the room. And you get into a room with guys and you start thinking, nobody can whip me. So it wasn't something you could turn on and off. It was something that stayed with you all the time, as a matter of fact. I remember winning a championship of the world. I defeated Joe Frazier. And I remember thinking, I can beat anybody in the world. Anybody. And it followed me around from restaurant, everywhere I would go.
How did that get in the way of things?
It got in the way of my life, because I no longer had a life. I mean, I wouldn't meet a friend. I was like, I'm meeting people that I could whip. You know,
right.
I size you up. You know you can't whip me, don't you? Hi. You know you can't whip me. So you lose a life because 24 hours a day you are the heavyweight champ of the world in your mind.
Now, how did that affect your relationship with women?
Same way. Hey, you're with the best man. You're with the men of men. You're with the best man. You're with the strongest, toughest, mightiest man in the world. And you felt like that. That's why I was so crumbling when I was defeated by Muhammad Ali. I was knocked out in 74. I'd never lost a boxing match as a professional. Counted out. It was like, man, I'm ashamed to go into the room with people now. They're going to know I'm not the best. And you get in a room with a woman, and she knows. She knows that I'm not the best. Maybe I should keep my clothes on. You know, this not only beats you, it's like you are stripped of your manhood.
Because all you were was the
all
best,
I,
right?
That's all I was the heavyweight, the best. And now there's someone better, and they all know. You figure I'm keeping my clothes on. Oh, I'm going to put on some dog glasses so they won't know who I am, so they can say, you know, there's one better than you. Like the old saying, mirror, mirror on the wall. And the mirror speak back, oh, there's someone else. I had to live through that, and it devastated my life. I felt like I was, you know, it was the most devastating thing that ever happened to me, because when I lost the title to Muhammad Ali, I felt like I lost my manhood. What I considered manhood.
Now, would you feel that way if you lost a bout now?
Oh, no. It was, I fought Ronnie Lyles back in 76 after losing the title. Because I told people I could have gotten up in the ring in Africa. I could have done this. I could have won. You look for every excuse. But there I am in Caesar's Palace. Ronnie Lyles, a big, strong guy, knocked me down. I'm bleeding on the canvas. I jump up. He knocks me down again. Then I knock him down. He has me on the floor bleeding. Finally, after beating the count two or three times, I knock him out. I felt restored again. Like, oh, I'm a man again. It wasn't Muhammad Ali, but I had my manhood again. I believed in myself a little bit. And I thought that people said, oh, George is tough now. So I got it back. Eventually, I lost to Jimmy Young in 77, and I found something even greater than manhood. I found God, you see. And he gave me something. I was able to admit I lost a boxing match and found a little peace within myself, and it has nothing to do with winning a boxing match or losing anything. It's peace of mind.
Now, you said that when you lost to Ali in 74, that you weren't knocked out. You were just staying down to the count of eight, but when you got up, the referee...
See, we were told, as a fighter, Archie Moore was one of my trainers, and Dick Sattler was his previous trainer and corner man. If you're knocked down, there wasn't any mandatory eight count as there is now. No matter if you're knocked down, you get up, you still have to be counted eight to clear your head up. This time in Africa, they tell me, when you're knocked down, always look to your corner. Don't listen to the referee. Let your corner count. Get your head clear. And when the corner tell you to get up, get up. So I was knocked down, and I looked around and found my corner. They told me to stay down, which is what they're supposed to do. Then they tell me, when they told me to jump up, I jumped up. The fight was over. But I was never out, never. I started thinking, all night I've pursued Muhammad Ali. He covered up with the rope-a-dope. He wouldn't mix it up. I could knock him out if he only mixes it up. And I'm on the floor thinking, now he's going to come out for the kill and try to finish me off. I'm going to knock him out now. That's what I was waiting to do. When they called, when I jumped up, they said it was over. The referee counted quick.
So you're angry?
Oh, I was devastated. I'd wake up in the night sweating, thinking, why didn't I just get up? Why did I trust my corner?
What'd you say to the people in your corner? What did you say to the people in your corner?
I fired them. I never worked with them again.
No, one last question. Is it true that all of your sons are named George?
We have four boys, all named George Edward Foreman.
Why'd you name them all George?
That was a pretty good name.
Okay.
You were trying to talk about my name? Take that. Take that. No, but literally, I didn't find out who my biological father was until after I had lost the title of the world. I had already had taste devastation. Then one sister came up to me and said, you know, Daddy is not your daddy. I said, what do you mean? You want to fight? She said, nope. And I had to search and find this guy. And I only became friends with him. We were friends maybe, I don't know, 2 years. And he was dead. I didn't know anything about that man. And I figured I better do something. All my boys, I'm not going to one junior and then another. I'm going to name them all George Foreman. They're going to have to sort it out and understand more about it as they get older. But I had to, when you can't find roots, plant something. And George is a good root.
George Foreman from a 1995 interview with Terry Gross. This is Fresh Air.